case number 55877, City of Monterey, Nevada, Municipal Corporation for Split Channel Professional Plaza. Go for it, you ready to proceed?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Chief Justice Cherry, may it please the court. My name is Dan Olsenberg, and I represent the City of Las Vegas. This case presents the central issue, whether federal patent deeds granted in 1956 create an easement. I think it is the issue that underlies almost every issue in this case. And Judge Delaney held that they did not, based on the language. Now, it's a funny thing, too, that she did that. Because when Cliff Shadows opposed our immediate occupancy, and when they moved for summary judgment, they did it based on four issues. In their reply brief, they raised seven issues. In the supplement to the reply brief, they raised what seems to be another issue, and at oral argument for the first time, they raised the language in the trust deed and said that the words subject to do not create an easement. That was never raised before oral argument. In fact, the words subject to are nowhere in their motion for summary judgment. Judge Delaney was intrigued by the argument, used a technique she said was taught to her by Justice Douglas, and asked for supplemental cases. We submitted three cases, Kennedy 1, City of Phoenix versus Kennedy for 1983 in Arizona, Kennedy 2, and Bernal versus Lokes, in which it is clear from those cases that the words subject to create in a federal patent deed create an easement. In fact, that's been universally held in the United States. All the Arizona cases say that. The Alaska cases, where the Small Tract Act also has provided a number of parcels for people, that they say that. And this court, in 1984, in Stokes versus Grimm, interpreted a patent deed that said, in a parcel in Reno, that where the patent deed said subject to a 33-foot wide right of way, that the owner there did have to dedicate the property because it was an easement.
That actually used the word easement in the subject to language, correct?
I would have to check on that as opposed to right of way, but we, in a very long footnote in our opening brief, set out how there is really no difference between rights of way and easements, that they're essentially the same thing. And most of the federal patent deed language does say right of way, as our three do in these two cases this morning, and all the cases that we cite from Arizona and Alaska stuff.
What do you make of the Neal decision that cited in the companion case to this case in terms of the scope of the easement, crediting your point that there is an easement? Assume that there is, what about the argument that the scope of it is narrower than the city has asserted in this case?
Well, Neal versus Brown was an entirely different case. That was a claim by neighbors trying to assert a private property right, not a public right of way. In that case, a landowner had an easement that went up to his land, and then on his own land extended that same road, even went by the same name, and with the permission of the county in that case, build fences along both sides. The neighbor said, well, we want to have access to other areas on our property by using that right of way. And there the Arizona Court of Appeals said, well, no, it doesn't give the private right of way owner the unlimited right of access. It's different here when we're talking about the city utilizing the public right of way. In the Kennedy 1 case, the 1983 case, City of Phoenix versus Kennedy, there the court went on to explain that when you're dealing with a public use of the right-of-way, you're dealing with the fundamental principle behind the Small Tract Act, that the idea of these rights-of-way, the idea of these easements, if you will, was to lower the burden on local governments in building roadways. Remember, the Small Tract Act, it wasn't just that, and I'm jumping ahead to the second case. Their argument there was that you have to show deed, and you have to show that the only reason that the Tract Act, where they take the position the only reason the Small Tract Act existed was to provide access to land-like parcels. That's only true when there's a private use of the right-of-way. When we're talking about a public use here, what we're looking at is to provide access, and Cliff Shadow says it in their answering brief, from area to area. It's to motivate utilization of public land. Remember, this land isn't just here for homes in the desert. This land was sold to citizens to provide residences, recreation, commercial, business, and community sites. So what we're talking about is utilizing the land to incentivize growth in the Western United States. And they also make the argument that as long as there is some access, and they use Neal versus Brown to say, as long as there is some access, then there is no need for this.
Mr. Postlebury, what do we do with the language from BLM in terms of their interpretation of this right of so to speak, for private engineering and public use?
Well, first of all of that was raised in supplements after the reply briefs in both of these cases. And it is not the extensive record on what the federal government's opinion is of the Department of the Interior. But even if you look at what those papers are saying, it is clear here that what they're saying is that there are two types of rights that the government is talking about here. And they're talking about, and we can see that in the two types of language. Now, respondent's going to have a blow-up of the language, and you have it in front of you. But they're talking about two types of reservations in this property. And they've used two different terms. They've used reservation, and they've used subject to. And that it is clear in the paperwork that you're referring to, Justice Douglas, that the government thought that some rights they were reserving to themselves and some rights they were carving out for the public. That the federal government didn't care about those rights, didn't retain, I won't say didn't care, because there is an interest in the Small Tract Act in utilizing this property to lessen the burden on local governments to build roadways in the West. But what they were saying is that they weren't reserving any rights to themselves. They were making that in language in one of those opinions that they set out. They're talking out about how the rights to the public they are saving, just as if it had been dedicated to a specific entity. Let's go through this. I see many of you looking at this document, at the respondents have handed out. Let's look at what their argument was in front of Judge Delaney. It's a limited scope of Judge Delaney's holding.
I just wanted to say, I know that is important to you, obviously, in anticipation for either of the respondents, but I want to be sure in my limited period of time that you have before us that you address at least what is of concern to me, and if we assume that the federal land patent grants an easement, what is the scope of that easement, and what about remuneration, if any, are the petitioners, the respondents in this case in town?
The scope of it is that we have a 33-foot wide right-of-way on the boundaries of the property. And here we're looking at the eastern boundary of the Cliff Shadows property. And we have the right to utilize that land as a roadway. Now, if we were taking in to build a city hall annex, that would be beyond what the scope of the easement is. But here we are utilizing it for a roadway. And because we are utilizing it for that purpose, we're not taking it. It has already been carved out. You know, this case is different from Robinson, and it is different from Albert, and it is different from Siskelyk in the sense that we are not taking anything from them. It was originally carved out in the deed given to the predecessor in interest. They got the five acre parcel, excuse me, and at an incredibly low cost. Remember, federal Small Tract Act parcels sold basically for the cost of surveying the land, often $2 or $2.50 per acre. So they're getting this land at a greatly reduced cost. But it comes with encumbrances, including the easements along the boundaries of the property, just so municipalities in the future would not be burdened by the cost of having to take that land back. So the landowners never got this right in the first place. We're not taking it from them. They never had that right. were utilizing the use, and one of the papers, Justice Douglas, that they attached to their talk about that is the whole idea. They are setting it out as if they were given the easement expressly to the municipality. Now, one of their arguments is that the city of Las Vegas was not named specifically in the easement. Well, that would have been a great deal of forethought because this property wasn't in the city of Las Vegas in 1956. But it is the whole idea. The city of Phoenix wasn't named in the parcels in the Kennedy 1 case. The whole idea was to leave this open to future local government use as a roadway. So, number one, Justice Sadek, we're not taking it. Number two, if we were taking it, let's assume for a second we were. If we were taking it, then we would be in the position that we are only taking what the respondents have. And here, because the land is encumbered, because there is an easement or a right-of-way on the property enabling us to build a road, they could never use that land for any use inconsistent with that. So the only thing that this 33-foot stretch could be used for would be to build a public road or a private road in some circumstances. But clearly, they couldn't use that parcel in that aspect of the parcel inconsistently with that. And so it had no real value, which is why we said we were offering a token $100 for this. Mr. Chief Justice, if I may reserve the last 4 minutes of my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Swartz.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, granted, do I disagree with everything Councilor said, but in this case, virtually everything he said. First of all, whether the city was, whether this property was in the city or not, is not material. The county wasn't named in it either. But in this case, the city was not named in this patent anyplace. And when the land roadways in 1951 and the 1992 letters, they're pretty much laid out what the intent of this was. This is not a case concerning access, because in the poor condition this landowner has, and I'm going to show you the commitment first, show you in the poor condition this landowner had access from Cliff Shadow, adequate access. So this is not about access. All of the intent of these bail-in letters is to show, is to give the landowner access to the interior parcel. This is a 3.5 miles long through here. It's 4 or 6 lanes up in here. This is just increased the capacity of this street through here. So the landowner had adequate access in the poor condition, which meets the intent of the BLM letters. Once that intent is manifested, that easement, in effect, goes away. Now, if you want to call it an easement, we call it a reservation, like a conditional on its test. Now, if you just take the face of this patent and try to blow it up, I don't know if the court can see it or not, but the BLM, first thing the BLM did is they said, well, look, there may be some mining claims out there. There may be some wells that are drilling for water to serve the mining claims. So what they do up here, they say, subject to any vested or accrued rights. That's one, vested or accrued. Because there may be a mining claim out there. They want you to know if you buy it on notice of this. Second thing is, when they got down to say, look, we're going to keep the gold, silver, mining, and mineral rights on it, and the canal, if we decided to put a canal in it. It's what they say. They reserve from the lands here by granted, say, right away, ditches, canals, and authority in the other part of the United States. And then they said, accepting and reserving also the United States, all coal and other mineral deposits. But when they get down to the subject property, they change the terminology. They say, this patent is subject to a right-of-way not exceeding. So we don't even know how many feet it is for sure, but they don't want it to go past 33 feet. That's the only ambiguous thing, ambiguous language in this patent. 33-foot for roadway and public utilities. Now, we know that utilities are almost always public, but looking where the brief, they move this word public in their brief over in front of the roadway. I assume that was a mistake on their part. But anyway, they moved that word public over. Now, let's go forward. If that is on its face, isn't convincing to the court that the intent of this was for landowners to get out of these interior parcels, because otherwise it'd be landlocked. That's the reason for it. Now, in addition to that, if you look at the, as I said, if you look at the layout of the before condition, Cliff Shadows had access out of the property, so access, even in their brief, they conceded on page 16 of the reply brief that these conditions, all the parcels that had access and had been improved out. So that, as far as we're concerned, the intent of those BLM letters is complete.
Mr. Waters, should we give any credence to the fact that these were just internal documents or proceedings as internal documents instead of in the congressional records or the public documents in terms of BLM's interpretation?
You can look at them that way, but who else would interpret these other than BLM? Congress would get down to the minuscule, they should say, writing of these types of things.
But we're looking at the intent of Congress, so wouldn't BLM have some responsibility to tell, so to speak, the child or the parent what they're saying and make sure the parent agrees?
Well, I would think that Congress, when they granted this right to the BLM, I think the predecessor was part of the interior, when they granted this to the BLM, they gave them the discretion to make these things work out. So they didn't want to landlock anybody, and they certainly didn't give the authority to make a six-lane road in front of their property like this. Now, if you go back to Sisolak, if you go back to Alfred, all of these are 72 cases. All of them are 72 cases. And Sisolak...
But before you go to those cases, is Mr. Poultenberg correct that no other state has construed, no other state or federal court has construed one of these BLM, or one of these federal patent deeds as you would have us construe it?
Not quite. Kennedy 1 and 2 and both Neal were not condemnation cases. They were not even domain cases. And Neal versus Brown in this court, you have to look, you read this closely. It limited this down and said, once you have access, you don't get it all around it. And these were private parties. These were not eminent domain. And I think the standard is much higher than an eminent domain action. The government is essentially taking this property in violation of the Constitution. And I think that the Alaska cases, for example, those patents are totally different. They named the state of Alaska in those documents. So, city's not named in this, the county's not named in this, the state's not named in this. These are private type grants.
Mr. Waters, you're talking, you mentioned something that's very important, and this is a crucial question. You use the word taking. So talk about encumbered versus unencumbered, okay, as it applies in this case, because that question deals with whether or not this is a taking and whether this was encumbered from the beginning.
All right. These patents that were only encumbered for the benefit of the interior parcels of the landowners. They were only encumbered for that purpose. Once that access is given, they have access to other properties, and that encumbrance is satisfied. That is our interpretation of it. I believe that's correct. Now, in addition to those reasons that I've just noted, the city and the county both tried to go in and claim compensation.
But is there any limitation that we can look at on what you take us to? That document that gives the limitation or sets forth what you just put forth, or a case of what you want to look at?
Well, for example, the Brown versus Neal case said, once you get it, you don't get it all the way around the property. In other words, the landowner is not encumbered as the entire area around all four corners. It's only encumbered to the point that he can get access to him and his neighbors out. That was already done in this case. Instead of even conceded in the brief on page 16, they said all the access to the interior parcels are already built out. The developer normally build these streets. And they're not always 66 feet, because if one of these parcels is not up against another small tract, you don't have 66 feet. You only have 33.
Mr. Waters,
yes, sir.
If, as you contend, the presence of the existing streets satisfied the requirements of this right-of-way reservation, was this an appropriate case for summary judgment?
We thought it should the court have taken evidence on the availability of substitute streets to satisfy this requirement.
Well, Your Honor, that's a good question. The problem is we asked for partial summary judgment on liability. The city then came in and asked for a full summary judgment. In their complaint, they asked for taking a full fee interest in the property. They tried to deny this later, but you read their complaint, they're asking for all the interest in the property, full fee, including the 33 foot. Now, since they conceded there's no fact question, and we said we're not going on liability, why would we go to the trial?
Well, it sounds like you're offering alternatives or substitutions for the requirements of the deed. That sounds like a fact finding requirement of the court to make. But maybe the 33 feet and where it's located is something that's a bit uncertain. Under the language of this reservation, I don't know where the 33 feet goes, and I'm not sure the landowner does.
Your Honor, we didn't receive their map that they applied for. I submitted that as part of it. It's a fact sheet of the kind of providers. We didn't receive that.
But I hear your argument, though. is if you're saying that this where the 33 feet is located is not as important as the requirement of it, the expectation of it isn't satisfied by the presence of streets that satisfy the location or satisfy the requirements. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. We have access.
So wouldn't the court have to make a determination if that's true?
I don't believe the city disputed that, Your Honor. We didn't dispute it. It's in the drawing, but we have adequate access out. And there's a difference between adequate access and super access. So all of the parcels had adequate access at the time of this, including ours. It was already done at the time they filed this complaint. I don't know if that answers your question, Your Honor. But since they didn't dispute it, and we didn't dispute it, I'm not sure why we need to go back and try that. Because it's laid out in your complaint where it is, and we don't dispute that.
Well, isn't your argument that it's saying then that subject to language is only really saying your property may be subject to an easement by necessity?
Well, Your Honor, the facts of this case is, as we understand, is the property was subject to an easement, or not an easement, but subject to a roadway for necessity, just to get out for access. Once that's done, that for all practical purposes, that expires. We think for all practical purposes, that's done.
But the point is that really this deed should be read as just creating an easement by necessity, and once access is gained by any means, it's gone.
That essentially is correct, Your Honor. But remember, this 72 language was tried in Sisolak, it was tried in Albert, it was tried in Robinson, and the court has always said, no. If you haven't paid for it, if you haven't paid fair market value for it, you can't set this aside.
But if you didn't grant it in the first place, that's a different point. I mean, that's their point. They try to distinguish Robinson and Sisolak and Albert by saying, you never got that particular right to the 33 foot.
Well, they said that in Sisolak too, but there was a navigation easement on it.
Yeah.
So they're saying he didn't get that either in Sisolak. Now, the landowner bought it subject to the navigation easement. Of course, I'm not trying to tell this court, you know better than I do what you meant by that, but that's what the language says. And that subject too doesn't give any rights. They didn't have it to begin with, and when they went down to the federal government in the Kern River case and tried to get money out of that, the federal judge said, no. So we say that's a collateral estoppel issue in this case.
Ms. Waters, I have a couple of questions. Did either side argue, either in the district court or in this appeal, that there are genuine issues in the material fact that are still unresolved and like that, or is it? You know, the way you answer Justice Hart's question, it sounds like both sides agreed to bring this up in some suggestion.
There's no dispute about question or valuation question. You asked, if you look at the city motion, you ask for a good summary of all holiday issues, including the valuation.
Okay.
And did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. Okay. We'll look at it again. I just want to get your position. Secondly, as far as the impact of pistol in this case, this one, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it came effective in November of 2008, and has the language without any government offsets. So the whole magic question here is, would this easement be considered a government offset? Is it or isn't it? Just slowly, what's your take on that?
Any claim, any property, any theory of the government that they haven't previously paid compensation for, that's used as a balancing or to set to essentially reduce the value of just compensation, that would not be an offset without any question. This would be true.
Yeah, but then, okay.
Well, aside from the, to take the, this case really turns, I think, to a large extent on the Mirage case, because Mirage says easements have to be interpreted narrowly only for the purpose that was intended by the easements. And that was one of the anchor cases that I recall in Sisolak. I'm not trying to tell this court what Sisolak says, you know better than I do. That was one of the anchor reasons in Sisolak. So if you interpret the intent of this patent easement, if you want to call it that, or necessity, or what we call it, essentially patent provision, if you interpret that Mirage narrowly, then the only thing that can do with it is just to get access out of the interior process. And that's been satisfied before we have power to sue. Any other questions?
I don't think it's a narrow easement at all. What it says is that we have a 33-foot wide right-of-way to build roads and public utilities. Now he's saying I moved the word public over to public roads. Actually, it's broader than that. There is a right of private roads as well. But we're utilizing the right to build roads and public roads in this aspect. Remember, the Small Tract Act was to incentivize intensive utilization of these areas of the West. It was expressly to limit the burden on local governments in building roads and utilities. So no,
I don't think. Something like injected his argument that since land ever had the right of way, then it was satisfied.
Do that one more time.
He's arguing since that landowner had access, it's done.
No. And he also twice argued that once that the easement goes away and another time that it expires, we set out that these easements never go away, even from a failure to utilize. There is no requirement of showing need for a public roadway. I think that there is for a private roadway. And Neal versus Brown had to deal with abiding landowners' rights. But when we're talking about the government's right to build roadways to incentivize intensive utilization, use the language of the courts in what the purpose of the Small Tract Act is. That this is exactly what the easement is used for. So SOC Mirage, we don't deal with that at all. He also talked about we weren't named in the property, but Justice Douglas, the documents that you're talking about, the BLM documents, the Department of the Interior documents, first of all, I think that they are not a true representation of what the purpose is. That would be going to the legislature now and asking them what they meant in enacting a statute 56 years ago. So it's not a valid historical perspective, number one. Number two, what they say, first of all, they're saying, don't ask us. We're only the federal government. These rights have been moved to the state local governments. And third, what they're saying actually ties in exactly with what we are saying. There are two uses of the land. One is subject to third-party usage. One is reserved in the federal government. And they made clear that the federal government intended to transfer all of its interest in and jurisdiction over the lands as completely as if the patent had been made subject to a right-of-way in favor of a named holder of such right-of-way. we are essentially the holder of that right of way because we are the, in the public trust utilizing that land for the public good. There isn't any, this isn't an easement of necessity. That wouldn't have needed to be expressed in the document. This is an easement that is being used for the public good. And so it's not just there for the other group. The other parcels, it's there to move, it's there for the development, not just particular access, so that one landowner can get to his land, it's so that the public will have access to all of these lands. And that's what makes this different from an easement of necessity.
Mr. Paulsenberg, could you address Justice Gibbons' earlier question
about questions of fact?
No, about this offsets.
And that is a good question. Article 1, Section 24, the pistol revision of the Constitution says that you value it without offsets. Now, offsets, it doesn't define offsets, and offsets can mean two things. What they seem to be arguing in this case is that an offset is anything less than full fee value. Now, I am paying full value for this land because it's encumbered. I'm paying full value for what they have, which is encumbered land. And that's only a token value. But their position is anything other than paying for full fee value as if it were not encumbered is an offset. I think offset could also mean that, and I think this is what it really means, although it's not an issue in this case, is if I have a piece of land and the government builds a road down that land, and it's open land, raw land, used for nothing. Now that there is a road on it, all of a sudden the rest of my property has more value. That, I think, is the offset that the pistol provision is going for. And that isn't the situation we have here. And the provision, I can just pick this up in my next argument, tell the truth.
Thank you for that.
Thanks.